welcome to Distinctly Well. I'm your host, Leo Tonkin. And in each episode, we engage in insightful and distinct conversations with a variety of experts, innovators, thought leaders, and friends, exploring what it truly means to live and be well in all facets of life. Let's explore, learn, and grow together. Welcome to Distinctly Well. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Distinctly Well. I'm Leo Tonkin, the host, and I have a very interesting guest with me today, Michael Tompkins, not Tonkin, but Tompkins. And Michael has been in a variety of positions over 30-something years now, I would think, with medical and hospitality and spa. He currently is the managing director for Hutchinson Consulting with Arch Amenities. Previous to that, he has enjoyed being a leader in a variety of different functions. Many people know of being at Mirabal as the CEO, and the list goes on. He also has a hands-on touch, being a massage therapist and a nurse practitioner, and he is previously with the chairman of the iSpa and actually receiving the Visionary Award coming up. So congratulations and welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Thanks.
I appreciate it. I've been looking forward to talking to you. You know, there's a lot of things happening in the industry, as you know. And, you know, when you start to look at spa, wellness, hospitality, what do you see as the intersection of these coming together at this point in time?
You know, I think the intersection is a really great word because, you know, 25 years ago when I was at Canyon Ranch and we were launching a functional and integrative medical practice at the Lenox property, I remember people saying that functional and integrative medicine was quack medicine and that alternative approaches weren't proven. And I know, working as a nurse, that patients came into our facility, guests, and they went home healed or on the road to healing in a way that for me was transformative professionally, because when I was a registered nurse in the hospitals, if someone came in with, let's say they were getting a heart stint or a bypass, you would see them a year and a half later getting a second one, or a year and a half after that getting a third one. And the process never seemed to be reversed. And so after 13 years in traditional medicine, going to Canyon Ranch gave me an eye-opening approach. And so when I look at the intersection, I always compare it to that first job that I had at Canyon Ranch as a blessing, because not only did I get to continue to practice medicine, but I learned new modalities of healing through acupuncture and healing touch and nutrition and exercise physiology and fitness and massage and skincare. And it's sort of, for me, I used to say, well, it was enhancing my toolbox. And having it in a beautiful setting was a way of looking at healthcare in a different perspective, because it was the rose-colored glasses. When you think about what we go through each time we need personal healthcare, you go in and check in at a desk, you sit in a waiting area with 35 people who are coughing and sneezing and who are sick right. as heck, and you're probably going to get it. And then if you have to go into a hospital, I think what are the chances of a nosocomial infection now? 40%. So then you're going to go into a hospital and you're going to get an infection there in the hospital from the hospital. And so having the opportunity to practice good health in a spa setting that was in luxury hospitality was the true rose-colored glasses of what the intersection was at that time. Now we're seeing it in a whole bunch of different types of models. The intersection is in shopping malls, at wellness places. It's in fitness clubs. It's in our own homes. Yeah. And so there are so many different parts of that intersection that have really infiltrated into a variety of different industries and our own personal spaces, so that it's coming full circle. It's the wellness that I had always hoped we could practice.
Yeah, as you're saying that, I'm reminded my father, many, many years ago, was a physician, and he was a DO. And back in the late 60s, they were considered quacks, so to speak, glorified chiropractors, if you will. And, you know, the history between the DO schools and the MD schools way back was the DOs were supposedly a little bit more about treating the whole person, not just diagnosing and prescribing. So I appreciate you saying that, because you start to see now functional and integrated doctors. You're starting to see a lot more self-care. I think the pandemic has fostered a different environment, although I think it has been evolving. But now you have this intersection. So how do you define spa today? You know, people have this image of, I go there and it's more of a pampering, or I go there and it's an occasion that if somebody gave a gift to somebody, you would go there once in a while, so to speak. Now, as you speak, how do you see spa evolving to what is spa?
It's such a good question. And I've thought about this a lot, Leo, particularly really started to think about it around 7 years ago. We created a concierge medical practice in St. Louis called Palm Health. And part of that project that Hutchinson worked on, and Hutchinson and Arch now, was the amalgamation of a healthy cafe, a fitness center, a medical practice, an IV infusion center, a salt room, a sauna, an infrared sauna, steam, cryotherapy, and the list goes on and on. And what I've decided in the thought of that question as it relates to 7 years ago and how now that's coming full circle and front facing is that spa is different based on the generation that you're in. So when I was in my 20s and 30s, it was pampering, and probably still is to that generation. They're still using it for mani-pedis and to get their hair done and to go relax and unwind. And, you know, they're working out hard and they want to, you know, get their muscles rejuvenated, and weddings and all of the things that go along, new moms. And then they want to get away. And so, for that generation, I think spa really is the pampering model. I think sometime around 40, it turns to be something deeper. And it gets back to the original intent of spa, which is the return to water. And so when I see now what's out there in the field that people are using with the float tanks and the cold plunges and the various thermal pools that, you know, you travel through an experience of thermal pools, like a project that we just did in the Dominican Republic. I realized that that's an entree into the generation, I would say, of 40 to 55, where you still have a little bit of pampering. Yeah. You now are looking to get deeper, and you might try something like a nutrition consultation or an acupuncture session or something that might help fix a little tiny ailment. And then, of course, now the generation that I'm in, which is the 55 to 70, is you want to stay younger. You want to stay younger longer. You want to be healthy. And you wake up with sore feet, or you wake up with a hip that hurts, or a shoulder that you can't move because you went bowling or golfed yesterday. And all of a sudden, spa becomes more of a wellness focus. And by the way, wrinkles and everything that comes along with skin that's aging and skin damage. And all of a sudden, you're looking at a more holistic approach to the benefits of spa and how it can incorporate us living younger longer. And so I see spa as sort of a blend of all three of those things based on the generation that you're in.
Yeah, very well, because it's shifting for me as well. You know, I got grandkids now. you start looking at it, you know, longevity or even aging well is becoming a whole phenomenon. I mean, not that we're in our aging years, but, you know, if we're going to be living to 120, what is that going to look like? But what about the generation that is earlier than those 40s? You have those that are now biohacking, and you have, you know, a whole different mentality of the Gen XZs, and now it's going to be the new Gen A's coming back in. How do spas reach out to them?
Well, I think we're doing it already. I thought this was going to be a question on the future of spa, so I'll answer that right now. And that is, you know, touch-free services. There are a lot of touch-free services out there. And I have a two-sided approach to how I feel about touch-free services. It's sort of like a dichotomy of, I really believe that the power of touch is one of the most neglected things that our body has, and a true aspect of healing, especially as it relates to energy work. And so I question, how can these touch-free services do this, you know, and give you the same result? Well, I have now had experiences of touch-free in many different applications. One that I recently did at in Florida, and it was sort of these touch-free journeys. And I paired them with spending time on my own in the sauna and steam room and being out by the pool, with combining that with cryotherapy and a PEMF mat and, you know, sound vibrations and everything else. And I have to say, it was a remarkably healing experience, and one that the relaxation effects lasted me 2 to 3 days after the treatment. But when you say, what about the next generation? I really believe that AI will be the next industrial revolution for our country, for the world. When you think back before factories and when cars were just being made, literally just being made, and the advancements of technology of, you know, to mass transportation and air flights and all of the things that have happened since that time, I think we don't even realize that we are on the burgeoning piece of that happening again globally, and that AI is going to take off in a way that we don't even know how the application will affect us, because it's going to be vast and far-reaching. And I think that for the younger generations, it will be a wonderful experience, because where you and I have had to try things out, or maybe we've never heard of something, or maybe we dabbled in something but we gave up on it, AI will give us, you know, what is actually best exclusively for us that can prolong our lifestyle and have us living younger longer. And so for the generations to come, I think that their age will expand tremendously, and maybe being 125 years old or 140 years old will be applicable.
A couple of things you said there that I really wanted to emphasize and kind of sort of touch on, not to be ironic, but, you know, I recently read something where you said spa is to create experiences that touch people. And that just really resonated with me, because, as you know, for the last 12 years, I've been bringing salt therapy to the spa and wellness industry, and worked with you all at Palm Health and so many projects. And, you know, you mentioned sauna and steam. The touchless modalities have been around since the advent of spa, so it's not anything new. And I know that the pandemic created a certain environment. Much has to do with labor and some of the shortages that I'd like you to address in a moment. But what I also think is most important is that even though you might not need much labor for some of these modalities, you need to be touching the guests from the moment they call in, from the moment they show up at the front, to the whole experience. And if you're not touching the guest, if you're not creating an experience, whether it is no labor involved or whatever the combination is, I think we need to be careful of just focusing on touchless and making sure that we are connecting, you know, before the guest arrives, after the guest arrives, how people can take that experience back home and then continue that. So, you know, I know that a lot of the focus has been on the labor market. We've been seeing nail salons being converted into other types of rooms for modalities. You're seeing Vichy rooms being converted, underutilized treatment rooms. A lot has to do with that business model and the labor market. What do you see is going to be filling in those gaps? Are people going to be coming back, the labor side of this, when you want to emphasize touch?
Okay, so I want to, there's two different pieces of that question. And the first gets back to what you were talking about with salt and touch and creating the experience. So I'll just mention the salt and touch first. I learned a statistic early on, and I can't remember. I think it was when I was CEO of Miraval, that almost 90% of people can tell whether you're smiling through the phone when you answer it. And so when you say creating an experience, the experience starts from the very second your potential guest calls you or your potential customer. And so making sure that you're smiling through the phone and then ticking and tying every one of the experiences back to that same customer service level can be sensed by us as humans without even saying, oh, this is part of the spa experience. It most certainly is. It starts from the very first answer of the phone. The second is when we were talking about some of the healing modalities, I had a very bad experience with COVID and the COVID vaccine. The COVID vaccine really took a toll on my heart. The COVID virus itself, I've had three times. And what I realized from the first time I had COVID, and when I thought I was going to die, I was in South Carolina at a spa event and I wasn't able to fly because I knew I could not get on a plane because I couldn't breathe. And so I had my family come meet me in South Carolina, and I realized in the 12 days that I was there gasping for oxygen that the only thing that helped me was laying at the ocean in a chair, and that the salt water and the mist from the salt water was a godsend. And when I would go back to the house, which was on the beach, by the way, and we had the house closed up, it was February, and, you know, it was cold, I would start suffocating again. And I almost wanted to sleep out on the beach all night. Well, over the course of the last 2.5 years, what I've realized is that our bodies now, from over sugaring, right, from processed foods, from excess stress, from pollution, from sun damage, from all of these things, we're creating and living in atmospheres that induce inflammation. And so things like cryo and salt and infrared saunas reduce inflammation. And so inflammation and gut health are really becoming a big piece of the healing aspects of what spa can do for a body. And I'm living proof of that. You know, I think about the acute phase of COVID and its symptoms were over. I then got mast cell syndrome from the vaccine. And so I was constantly at places trying to get into a salt chamber because I couldn't get to the ocean. And the salt chambers really worked for me, but it would only work for like 2 or 3 days. And, you know, we have a friend in common, Nancy, and, you know, she connected me with getting one of your salt, the portable ones for home. And I put that in my shower and, you know, I'm one of those people who used it every day and it really helped me. And I'm not saying it because it's your product, because, you know, the salt rooms that I was going to in strip malls were not your product. At least I don't know that they were, but that aspect of healing is not something that was normally thought of as being spa. And now it is.
No, I appreciate it. It is. I mean, when I first learned about it, I was surprised. And then, you know, in the very beginning, 12 years ago, when I went to the first iSpa show in 2013, and I would talk about salt, you know, is foreign. You know, back then, people weren't talking about cryotherapy either. They weren't talking about cold plunges. So earlier, when you're talking about the acceleration of technology and what's happening, it's pretty interesting to see. especially with artificial intelligence going on. I think one of the biggest, at least the way I look at it, the data that is being collected and being able to personalize and customize evidence-based treatment for people that really dial in to what, let's say, Michael needs or wants, I think is going to be crucial for us. You know, I know when I go to the spa and I like a certain type of massage, when you get to the right therapist that really knows your body or what you really like, the experience is so much different than just showing up. And I think AI has a lot more to contribute. What are you seeing at Arch and at Hutchinson where that's starting to shape what you guys decide to do, how you're designing? How does that work?
You know, it's what I'm so happy you asked that question, because I still have the third part of the last one, which is, what are we going to do about the shortage in spa? And is touch-free replacing that? And I look at it like the, you know, yes, we're short massage therapists and I guess estheticians now there's enough of, but not enough nail techs. And, you know, and I look at how we've treated our employees. And you have a massage therapist and you're requiring them to work 32 to 40 hours a week, but then you're not paying them health insurance, or they don't get vacation time at their booked rate. They get vacation time at their standing wage, which could be a difference of $30 to $40 an hour. You know, there have been so many instances of not keeping people on a full-time status so you don't have to pay them insurances. I mean, the list goes on and on. Not only how they're paid, but how are they booked? And what's the booking process for that? And, you know, are there discrepancies, you know, across the board in benefits and salaries and even how you're treated in a spa from a therapist perspective? And then throw in a pandemic. And now you got to work around germs. And everybody who comes in and lays on your table, you could be getting a disease that could, you know, a virus that could kill you. And so what happened was, it was a natural progression out of the spa. Like, who would want a job like that? Even though as a massage therapist, being a massage therapist, one of the things that de-stressed me the most was helping other people de-stress, using my hands on other people's bodies and creating that energetic synergy that calmed me down as much as it calmed down my guest. And so there was this exodus, right? There was also an exodus because we didn't make it convenient. You have to work evening shifts, so you can't be home with your kids. You can't go to their Christmas pageant or their holiday play because, you know, you have to work. Every weekend you're booked, so you can't take your child to his high school football game. I mean, they don't give you Saturdays and Sundays off because that's when people have off to go get massages. And so when you combine all these things, we were not being respectful of the practitioner who was doing the job. And so that brings me back to, what is Arch doing? And that's one of the things that I love, is the progressive pieces of our company. And I'll use an example with Spa Space. So Spa Space is a three-tiered platform system where you can sign up as a massage therapist, and you, Leo, because you said you like a massage a certain way and it's finding the right therapist who can give you the type of massage you want. Well, this is a tech platform where you can go in and choose the type of massage that you want, and you can get a list of all the providers that give that service. And then you can have that provider show up at whatever facility or hotel that you're at. And so it provides a three-way system for the guest, for the hotels, and for the facilities, and then third, for the therapist. Because if I'm working now, today, at Marriott, wherever, and tomorrow I'm working at Palm Health, and the next day I'm working wherever to get booked, maximized, and I can control my schedule as a therapist to say when I want to do that service, then it becomes very convenient to the user as an employee. And so I think it will bring back massage therapists and nail techs because they'll have control. The best part about it is how the payment system works. So let's say you're a single mom, two kids, you're a massage therapist, you're out of grocery money or you need to pay your phone bill. And so you go on to Spa Space, you open up your availability at night on an evening on a Thursday, and you do three massages. You finish your massage treatment, you're automatically paid the minute you finish the treatment. You don't have to wait 2 weeks for a paycheck. You're paid right away. And therefore, you can pay your grocery bill, you can get your whatever shoes or costume your kid needs for something, or you can pay your phone bill. And so it's creating those elements of convenience, not just for the facility and for, you know, the guest, but also for the employee. And so it's those things about Arch that I really like, that we're setting cutting edge standards in place for the future of wellness and spa.
Yeah, you know, people are going to are pivoting to create new business models. And Alana and all the folks and what you guys are working on there, you know, it's pretty interesting creating even the database and the intelligence of what you're going to be able to capture from that. It's going to be pretty interesting to see. But it also touches on the point of workplace wellness. You know, there's a lot of conversations about that. And here you have facilities providing wellness. And to your point, what are we doing to keep our employees, our staff well? Last year, we did a project with the Waldorf Astoria at the Biltmore in Arizona. And Becky over there, they have their staff going into the salt room at the first sign of sniffles, at the first doing different things. You have Denise over at the Breakers in terms of what they've been doing for their wellness models. So it's interesting about coming full circle to really look at what we can be doing to take care of our family, so to speak, our tribe in that space. When you look at that, you know, it kind of goes back also to, I think, why people may have gotten into this industry in the first place. I know for yourself, I think, I know it was me growing up with my father being a physician, wanting to truly be a healer, really wanting to touch people and doing that. As spas are evolving, it seems like they got to go beyond some of the perceptions of just being hair, nails, massage, and facials. Do you see that shift happening faster now, or some are more on the train getting there? Or what do you see in terms of the business models for the facilities?
I think that there are things that have been right in the spa experience from the beginning and things that have been rote, and rote as in terms of R-O-T-E. And that is, you know, you mentioned Denise at the Breakers. It's very similar to the Canyon Ranch and Miraval models of wellness. And I know early on, you know, when I was at Miraval, I used to work with the Breakers quite frequently, and we would trade, you know, people or tips, or I would go there and learn from them. They would come to my place and learn right from me. And the aspects of making sure that you take care of your people is very important, because I learned early on as a nurse that you can't take care of others unless you take care of yourself. And so we have to make sure that our staff is taking care of themselves, even if we have to be the people to push that, right? Because you don't go to work and your mom is there or your wife is there to tell you, you got to go do this. So, you know, but the healing aspects of those things, you know, can be incredible. One of the things where I think that we've lacked is in financial well-being, because that certainly has a huge effect on our overall well-being, and do we have enough money? And particularly in an economy like we have right now, where everything is going up so fast, and do you have enough money to even buy groceries? You know, it's imperative that we also assist our employees, not only in their physical and mental well-being, but also their financial well-being. And for that aspect, that's one of the reasons why I created Wage Insights with Arch and Hutchinson. When we looked at the model of how people were being paid, we saw that there were discrepancies all over the spa space of how much people were being paid, and were men being paid more than women, and what was the standing rate versus the hourly rate. And what was the fair wage, an equitable wage? And then, you know, it was, is there anyone out there who has a really good model? Because everybody's been looking for it for 30 years. And I think we've touched on with this first one that we just finished with Wage Insight, Wage and Salary Survey. We just finished looking at the data, and I do think there's one property that's submitted out of all the people who submitted that really has a good model that might be able to get legs. And so for me, if I could have a swan song or a cherry on top of the sundae as I age out of my career and sort of put a bow on it, it would be to make sure that the financial system across spas is equitable and fair. And that's why I'm trying to make sure that as many spas out there get to hear about Wage Insight so they can submit to the survey so that we can give viable data to be able to take to the business owners to say, this is what's a fair wage. And this is how a person can afford to live and work in spas.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. It's almost you need a different leadership and management model in the industry.
Well, that's an important line right there, Leo, because, you know, I was also a hotel CEO and a hotel general manager. And so I know, you know, whether my budget was, you know, $2 million or my budget was $1.2 billion. And believe me, I did the breadth of both of those in the leaders of company of the companies that I ran. The only way to convince a leader of a company that things need to change is with data. And so you can't just go and say, well, they can get $25 an hour down the street, or this person's making $15,000 more than me and they have a smaller spa. You have to be able to go and say, here's the quantitative data from a survey of 2,000 locations in, you know, the four states around us and ours, and here's why I'm underpaid. When you take that kind of data to human resources and the owners of companies and general managers and CEOs, it's then not coming from an ego place. And you have actual stuff to support it to be able to say, no, this is where the industry's at and this is what you're paying me.
Data plus data plus data. Our perspectives are not always right on. And I think that's where we're starting to evolve. And I know that as one of those visionary leaders that you have been, how do you transfer that to those being in the industry? And how do you develop that? I know, you know, people gravitate towards that. And it's a strong message. I don't think we do enough of that. There's wisdom to be shared, I think, around all of this. And then part of that, to me, seems that if you can create that model, then maybe spa and wellness can be more accessible to everybody. Not just the luxury brands or here or there, but maybe there's a model like you were just talking about at home or what people can do. Because how do we take it so that, and obviously there's a range of the pendulum of places from the Canyon Ranches and the Miravals to the community-based wellness centers, to doing things in our community, to giving back, which I know is a big part of what you do. I know one of your passions is art and how you like to give back. So I just want to digress as we're kind of getting to it. Now that you mentioned it, kind of as you're aging out or whatever you said, what's next for you?
That's the million-dollar question, right? I think that I've had a very blessed career. I've been fortunate enough to work with smart people who have helped me grow professionally and personally. And what I want to do is to be able to continue to touch people, whether, you know, like when I worked as a nurse or when I worked as a massage therapist or when I worked as a CEO. It's all the same sort of heart-centered truth that I've tried to live by from an integrity perspective, no matter what the situation might be. It was always, let's do the right thing. And then if it was a financial failure, we would figure out how to make it efficient so that you could still do the right thing and make money. And so I think that in that process, I fell in love with art and the creativity of people who could create amazing things out of nothing and be the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. And sometimes I would have these moments in art experiences that would change how I felt or thought about a particular situation. And it would change my mood, or it would change something in me to where I thought, well, the mindfulness piece of art, if it could be done on a large scale, could have a really great impact. And so that's one of the reasons why I did start St. Louis, which was with street art. That collection, by the way, the nonprofit that I had created paid $4,000 for each pair of 8-foot by 10-foot paintings that the artists did. And not necessarily paintings, because they could have been poems, they could have been quilts, you know, right, things like that. We gifted the collection last year to an inner city nonprofit in St. Louis, and the value of the collection was $1.5 million. And I had taken people, artists off the street and famous artists who some of whom were unknown, who since 2018 are now in the Smithsonian Institute, are now in the top 1% of all artists, you know, in the world, 1% is selling. And so the value of the art just exponentially went up very high. But I think that's because of the energetic creation that we had around wanting to use art to heal. And I think those giant canvases reflected that emotion and drew people in. And I think the artists learned from how they could affect people by doing the right thing. And it showed in their art. And now many of them are very successful because of it. I would love to be able to do something with art in the future. I also have a huge passion for dogs. I love my dogs tremendously. And I love the book by Eckhart Tolle, Guardians of Being, which really teaches you to be mindful as a dog when you're walking a dog. And I'd like to do something that blends.
What kind of dogs do you have? I don't think I know.
I have two dachshunds. They're both girls and they're both puppies. Yeah. So one of them's a piebald dachshund, short hair, and then the other is a long haired red mini.
My stepson has two dachshunds, long hair and short hair, Jack and Ollie. Yeah, but me.
Jack and Ollie. Mine are Polka and Dottie.
And I've got, when I met Lori 8 years ago, and this is our second marriage, she had a Shih Tzu, and at the time I had a Maltese, and now we have a little poodle, 2 years old. He's just like a toddler. Oh, wow. So I can empathize. And I often say, I wish I had a dog's life.
I agree. In my house, anyway. Sometimes a dog's life isn't all that admirable.
This is true. This is true. Well, Michael, I really appreciate you taking time out. It's been a true joy talking with you. I know we can go on for a long time. But I wanted to take time to really thank you for what you've been doing in the industry. I know that you do bring a lot of wisdom. You know, people are starting to look at how do we spa well, and being on the show on Distinctly Well, I really appreciate you taking time out and sharing your thoughts. And I look forward to you getting salted in the future. Thanks.
Thanks so much. You can bet on it. I appreciate it. Thank you, Leo.
Thanks for joining us in this episode of Distinctly Well. For all the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, head over to distinctlywell.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show to never miss an episode, and check out the video version of each episode over on YouTube. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, live distinctly, live well.